Thanks, Cheryl. Nice to be back. And I hope that was 2 seconds. And as always, I am really glad to be here. Would love to speak about your questions. Anything that is coming up for you that's present here and now, or even just something kind of more general, or something you've wondered about, wanted to know something about in terms of your spiritual unfolding, your inner experience. So really anything at all. Oh, great. You have a question, but the mic will leave dead space. It won't record me. Huh. Well, I'd still like to ask your answer your question. So let's do that, and maybe I don't know if you have the ability to edit the recording, but you could edit out the blank space and also my comments so far, if that's possible for you to shorten the recording. Otherwise, we'll just have some dead space. People will understand if they hear me saying that. So I will let go of the mic, and you can ask your question. So, Cheryl, that blank space, for those who are listening to the recording, that blank space was Cheryl asking a question, and a very human, very challenging question. She has a daughter who's 35 years old and has cerebral palsy. And it sounds like from her description that's been a great challenge and probably also a great blessing in her life. That she's learned to see her daughter as whole and perfect, and also had to deal with all the grief and sadness over the challenges and limitations of that condition. And now her daughter wants to have a child herself, which is completely understandable from a human, again, from the human perspective. She wants a life like everyone else. And yet, it's a tremendous. It would be an especially big challenge for her because of her condition, because she is not completely mobile, has to spend most of her day in a wheelchair, an electric wheelchair. So that's the picture. It's very sweet. Cheryl said at the end, she's not even sure what her question is. And yeah, it's sometimes hard to even form a question with these very, very rich and yet complex and difficult experiences we have as human beings. What is the question? What is the choice? What are the possibilities? The first thing I would say is very simple, really. It's just how deeply touched I was by this story, and it's just complete. I just feel total compassion for your daughter and also for you, because it's putting you into quite a bind, especially if she is asking for you to come and live with her and help raise the child. So that all being said, there's just one thing that's coming, and it's just really on a very practical level, a very down-to-earth level of, sometimes the best solution is something you discover by thinking outside the box. We have a tendency to focus in on, our idea of a particular experience that we want and how it should look. And so it never hurts to sort of like brainstorming, to throw out all these other possibilities. And the one that was coming to my mind, which you may have already spoken to her about, is the possibility of finding other ways to satisfy what it is she really wants. I'm sure what it's really about is she wants the opportunity to experience that kind of love and that kind of connection with a young person, or and to be involved in someone else's life in that way. And so it might be actually a great experience and also a chance. Cheryl was saying that in a perfect world, she would help her design an accessible home with separate living quarters for privacy and have all the support and love she deserves. Yeah, that's another way of thinking outside the box of how to arrange your living situation to make this work. And also for you, so you have privacy, and so you still can have a life when you're not there helping her. But the direction I was going, which again you may have already thought of, and may have considered or may not have considered, is finding other ways for her to be intimately involved with children, either volunteering at a daycare center. Becoming, they're the big brother, big sister organizations. I'm not that familiar with them, but they allow you to sort of adopt a child. But it's more like you become a grandparent than a parent, in that it's a part-time commitment. And even if she, oh, she already works for Boston Independent Living Youth. Okay, so it sounds like she's already kind of explored this, and it may even be I was going to say that working with children might either, satisfy her this more inner drive for connection and love and sense of you could almost say family. And or it might clarify it for her so that she becomes even more convinced that that's what she wants. So, I'll also speak about it more generally, and this is really for you, Cheryl, that it's always important to really, really stay in touch with what's true for you. And if it's true for you to take on this obligation or this commitment, because in a sense, given her limitations, I think that it would be a decision that you were making to have a child. That's it's as much a choice for you. Her goal is to be a guidance counselor in the school system. What a wonderful, wonderful, again, a wonderful way of expressing that what it's really about. Is about contact, connection, love, and whether a child would be the. I mean, a child definitely would not be the only way to experience that, and it sounds like she's already discovering that. And so, again, Cheryl, for you, I think it's a question of what's really true. There's no. There really is no right or wrong in the usual sense. There is, life is, it's all good, it's all perfect, it's all rich. And that includes, it includes whatever we tend to leave out, So if we tend to think it's good to support your daughter and be there for her, even in this, rather profound and committed way. And yet, it's also good to take care of yourself, to do what is true for you at this point, at this stage in your life. I had a spiritual teacher years and years ago, and he was also a psychotherapist, and he said that one of the most important jobs of a parent is to actually stop being a parent. And it's the parent's responsibility to stop being a parent. And so, whether that, is a consideration, whether that could be something to ponder in terms of even with the limitations that your daughter has, there's a certain value in giving someone the opportunity to really face the reality of their situation and really be responsible for the actual reality of what's happening in their life. And as a parent, we often act as an intermediary between our child and reality. We kind of, we give them a lot of space to grow and to evolve, but is it really true ultimately to keep them in that bubble? Or is it true at some point to let them move out into the world? And it's not that you have to withdraw your love or your support or your concern or anything like that. It's, you can still be friends with your adult children, but at a certain point, it's really helpful to hold this concept or this possibility in mind that you can stop being a parent. I think it would be a profoundly challenging to do that in the case of a child with cerebral palsy. And so I don't think it's a hard and fast rule, that you have to stop being a parent or that there's no place for any parenting. And, that would be taking this idea too far in the other direction. Like thinking that you necessarily have to cut off all contact with your child. That would be taking it way too far. But there is a oh, that's sweet. Cheryl's typed, "I have worked through quite a bit of shame and guilt around our relationship when she was younger. I was not always there for her. I was going through my own stuff. She resented me for years. Now we are at a place where we can ask for what we need from each other." Oh, that's beautiful. That is a relationship of two adults, where you can both ask for what you need from each other. And so you're not in the parent role, where as a parent you pretty much have to expect that the child will ask a lot more from you than you will ask from them. And when that's no longer true, when it's equal, then it's no longer a parent-child relationship. So again, if it's a choice that you, Cheryl, are bored with, and really, your heart opens. I said it's important to know what's true for you. And the truth is what opens our heart and quiets our mind. Someone else mentioned in the chat window that they have a young adult child who's addicted to drugs and just relapsed again. And this is where it gets really subtle or tricky to really, really apply that distinction of what opens your heart and quiets your mind, because it doesn't always feel good. When we get in touch with the truth, it sometimes breaks our heart open, because it's so challenging. It really is stretching us to recognize that it's that something's true for us or no longer true for us. And so if you have a son, adult child, he's not a child anymore, right? He's an adult. And they're going through something like a relapse into drug addiction. The truth of how to respond to that is there's no formula. It's not, so even that idea, even that I think helpful idea that one of the jobs of a parent is to stop being a parent, it's just an idea, and it points to a possibility that sometimes is overlooked. But to turn that into a formula, to turn that into the right way to treat your adult children, every every human being is unique, and every experience of being a parent and having children is unique. The woman who has, I think it, yeah, it's a woman who has a son who's addicted to drugs, says his disease has brought me to my knees. And that's that. That can be part of that, again, getting in touch with what's true, what's real. And so there is no, there just cannot be a formula for that. And it may be, you know, maybe that concept of one of the jobs of a parent is to stop being a parent is a really useful pointer. If it is it's like if it's the aspect of truth that hasn't been seen yet. And you know, when something is not true, when it's not complete, when it's not a full seeing of the situation and of the truth of the experience, then it can have the opposite effect, where it contracts your heart and your mind gets very busy. It's like the mind is trying to make up for the relative absence of truth, or the relative sense that it's not true. It's what's you're experiencing is not complete. The perspective is not complete. And so when that happens, that's actually wonderful, because you can know that whatever perspective you have on it, whatever way you're thinking about it, right in that very moment, it's very dynamic, very moment to moment. But if you're if you know, the thought of, say, rescuing your son, or the thought of, you know, either you know, helping your daughter have a child, or not helping, or the thought of not helping your daughter have a child, you know, if either one of those contracts your heart, any of those kind of thoughts or ideas or concepts or plans, or you know, just ideas really, if it contracts your heart and seems to make your mind very busy, then a wonderful question to ask yourself is, what else is true? If something is not very true, that doesn't make it wrong or bad. It doesn't make the fact that you're experiencing the contraction wrong or bad. But it does point to a possibility, which is that there's something else that's truer. If what you're experiencing is incomplete or not very true, then the question, what else is true? What else is true? And that's like, you know, even that simple little thing I suggested, that maybe she get involved, the daughter who wants to have a daughter get involved with working with children. You know, that just might be a little piece of the truth that you hadn't considered, a possibility. And, you know, without knowing a whole lot more, in fact, without being another person, I can only, you know, at best offer you know, possibly a little piece of the truth that, you know, fills in some of the blanks or points to other possibilities, other ways, you know, other approaches to an adult that's addicted to drugs, something like that. And so, you know, one thing that is always helpful to remember is that whenever there are words, so like right now, there are words. I'm speaking, there are words coming out of my mouth. You're hearing them. Whenever there are words, then already you can be sure that at best you're hearing half the truth. That's like the very best words can do. It's just, you know, even the most subtle, poetic, beautiful description of the ultimate reality of our being. Ah, you know, when it comes out of your mouth, it barely captures a fraction of the truth. And then when it comes down to very specific practical concerns, about whether it's time to stop being a parent or it's not quite time yet to stop being a parent with that particular child. Any thought you have will at best be half the truth. And by the way, this is applies to the words that just appear in your own thought stream. The words, by their nature, you just can't. There are not. It's like, you could. There are not enough. There's not enough reality in words to capture the actual reality, even of something very simple. So you could write a 1,000-page book about an apple, and that book would still not be sweet. That book would still. You could chew on that book, and you would still not have experienced an apple. And so, that's the sense. So I just say that to reassure anyone that when my words, again, when my words seem to offer a little piece of the truth that wasn't considered, that's great. When my words cause a contraction, that's great, because that just lets you know they are not relevant or true for you in this moment. So Cheryl also typed in that she has embraced diving deep into the sensations of fear to overcome the fear. And that's what I spoke about last week. So if anyone wants to dive into their fear, it's really just into the sensations of fear, because when you break it down into the sensations, it's really no big deal. You might want to check out the recording from last week's satsang, which is on the website. You can probably find your way to it. So someone typed in, definitely do deep inquiry into this role of grandparent, grandparent. Actuality is much different than words. Yeah, again, even just a single word like parent or grandparent, it doesn't nearly do justice to the incredibly powerful experience of having having that role, you could call it, but it's so much more than just a role. There's so many levels to it. Who knows how many dimensions there are, connections there are, maybe past lives. And so deep inquiry, that was the suggestion in that comment. To really, really find out what is true practically, what is true energetically, emotionally, what is true in your own kind of quite your own kind of calling, you could call it, your own inner drives, your deepest drives. How true is it for you to be involved or not involved or less involved or more involved? Especially again with an adult child, or in the case of someone else who commented on here, they talked about how their grandson stayed the summer and rearranged their life. I can't hear you on that one. Even the role of a grandparent, it's like it's. See, there is no. Again, there is no right or wrong. So it. One way of saying it is that it's all make believe. It's all we all we get to make up our own version of what it means to be a grandparent, what it means to be a parent, what it means to be a friend, what it means to be a lover, a husband, a wife. And there's no right answer to that. It's more like a creative act. And this is where that listening to your own heart, checking what is truest for you. There's always some truth. I mean, even whatever particular decision you make on a practical level, it will always only be just like the words are only part of the truth. Anything you actually do in life will limit you from doing other things. So, helping your daughter have a child will, of course, limit you from doing other things. And choosing not to help your daughter have a child would limit you from having that experience. I remember years ago a friend, I think this was something from, actually from Est, from the Earhart, you know, Werner Earhart's thing. And a friend said to me that you don't really have freedom until you commit. That before you commit to an experience, to a relationship, to a job, you know, that before you actually use that freedom to make a choice, you don't actually have freedom. It's only when, so it's kind of a funny thing, you know, we only have freedom when we, in a sense, give it away, when we you know, make a choice that limits our freedom. But we've chosen, we've made that decision. And so this is actually a much bigger truth, in that we everything we experience that really matters in life, that we experience it from the inside out. We don't get freedom from out there. We don't get love from out there. We get those things by giving them, by you know, expressing them. That's how we get filled with love, is by expressing love. That's how we experience our freedom, is by using it, choosing, and including choices around being a parent or being a grandparent. Now, I see, Cheryl, you wrote, yes, where it leads me is to ask, is this true? And the answer is no, Sarah and I are perfect. I just wanted to check, is the answer no, that it's not true for you to help her have a child? Is that what you're referring to? Or is it a more subtle thing? Because again, that's the question of whether or not to help your daughter have a child it's actually, strangely enough, a very narrow choice. It's a very big choice relative to choosing what to have for breakfast. But it ultimately is not that important a choice in terms of, one way of saying it is in terms of your eternal soul. If you think, what will the impact be of this choice on your eternal soul? Oh, yeah, that's great. Cheryl says, no, it's not true that she needs anything, and also that I am capable of handling anything that is put in front of me. Yeah, that's stepping back into the even bigger truth. And then you can step back in with more perspective to make a choice, to decide, to give away some of that freedom you can sense in that big truth, that it's not true that she needs anything. And it's also true that you're capable of handling anything that's put in front of you. Those are, again, even bigger truths. And then I was pointing to another big truth, which is that all of this is just small potatoes, you know, for your eternal soul, for what you really are. I mean, what you ultimately are is this pure, limitless consciousness that is dreaming this whole reality into existence. And that's what you are. You are the dreamer of the entire universe. And what we normally think of ourselves as, you know, a parent, a grandparent, a person, a man, a woman, those are all just characters in the dream. That's not actually what you are. It's just a very convincing aspect of the dream that limits us when we get identified with it. But what you are is the dreamer. What you are is the source of the totality of existence. And then you can play. So someone typed in, so I need to investigate the guilt I feel if I don't help my children and grandchildren. Absolutely, that would be a wonderful thing to inquire into. I can, you know, I can, it's kind of a rhetorical question, but I would ask you, does guilt open your heart and quiet your mind? I'm laughing because I've never experienced guilt that opened my heart and quieted my mind. By its nature, it's such a narrow way of looking at things. It's such a limited perspective. In fact, it can be a very contracted perspective. In order to see yourself as guilty, you have to contract your awareness. And so, investigating the guilt is really the best way to investigate guilt is to really feel it and really feel that contraction and recognize that it must not be very true. It must not be a complete perspective. That any story that includes guilt is leaving out so much truth, especially if you think you are guilty. There are so many factors and so many, you know, different dynamics to something like a parent-child relationship. Like I said, you know, one of them is this strange idea that it's the job of the parent to stop being a parent. And if that's true, if that's part of the truth, then, you know, it would be, much, much less complete a truth to think that you're still obligated as a parent to take care of your adult children, or then to help take care of their children. That was not a commitment that you made when you had your children. And so, again, it's not black or white. It's opportunity to question, to investigate, and to realize that guilt is just simply not a complete way of looking at things. It's ridiculously incomplete. one way of seeing the limited perspective of guilt is that none of us actually choose our actions. They are the net result of literally thousands or probably millions or billions of influences, pieces of conditioning, deeper impulses coming from our higher self, past life, karma, the weather, all the things everybody in our life ever told us. And so, if you take an action, if you even a fairly involved action, like help your child have a child or not help your child take care of their children, you're not really choosing that. It's really the whole, the entire, it's a funny thing to say, the entire universe is choosing your actions every moment. If you really trace back, all the causes and all the effects, you realize that everything is involved in everything that happens. And again, ultimately, it's all a dream that God or the ultimate reality is having. And so how can you be guilty? How can you be to blame for something that is happening? Sharon, can you talk about past lives? Thanks for pointing that out, Cheryl. I let that one slip by me. Yeah. So I am not an expert in any sense in past life or past life progression, so I don't have a lot of specific experience, direct experience. And yet my sense, This is applying that measure of truth as what is it that opens your heart and quiets your mind. And my sense about past lives is that, of course, there are past lives. That why would this infinite, limitless consciousness that is dreaming this whole universe that's unfolding before our eyes and ears and nose and taste buds, why would it limit itself to experiencing a particular character through just one lifetime? Why, you know, it's dreaming the whole thing. It can dream anything it wants. And it just makes perfect sense that it would choose to see what it was like to have an apparent identity or separate self through many lifetimes. I mean, just think about all the different possibilities that that opens up. It's like both in terms of, you know, just all the, you know, how many more things you can try and do and be in many lifetimes than in one. And also on the level of relationships, how much more you can learn, how much more you can explore about, you know, what it means to share this oneness with apparent others by, say, reincarnating with them over and over. It just, you know, just as there's a huge difference between the experience of, you know, meeting someone and having a nice conversation and then you never see them again, and versus, you know, someone you've known for years or decades, you know, someone you've known since you were young, and how, you know, how different and rich that experience is also. And so why would consciousness limit itself to just one life, to unfold these incredibly dynamic and rich experiences we call relationships? You know, recently someone asked me about karma, and the main gist of my response, this was in a blog post, it's on my website, you can find it on there, a recent blog post. But the main gist of my response was that I said karma, it's not really like a form of punishment, but rather it's like a teacher. It's like a means that, again, this one divine consciousness, this one reality uses to evolve and teach the apparent aspects of itself. And so rather than, you know, an experience that you have being like, again, some kind of punishment, it's simply the reality using whatever it has available to show you something, to unfold something, to give you a deeper understanding, a broader perspective, to bring you to more of the truth. Which it seems like, I don't know, you know, it's like, maybe it's just because this infinite limitless consciousness is also eternal, that it had to come up with a clever way to pass eternity. You know, that's a lot of time, a lot of extra time on your hands when you're eternal, and so it had to come up with something to make that interesting, to make that more rich, and you know, and the way it did was to create these apparent individuals, again, in a single life or through many lives, and then see how they can evolve, and even ultimately how they can add to the, you know, it's like the consciousness is already limitless, eternal, it's already perfect, it's already complete. And then there's always room for improvement. There's always room for to discover something new. And that's I think why it went to all this trouble to create these apparent individuals, because that's a new experience for something that's limitless rather. It's a new experience for something that's limitless to become limited. And there's all kinds of experiences that come with that. So this is a great question. Someone typed in, does the dreamer get to decide? So there are many levels to that question, and I'm not sure exactly what you yet to decide, and especially to decide to come back. There are many levels to that question. Some teachers say that, as long as it appears that you have a choice, then you need to pretend that you have a choice. And so, whether that's the choice of what to have for lunch, or the choice of what career to take, or whether to stay married or get married, or all these kind of day-to-day choices, or it's a choice kind of on a soul level about coming back into another incarnation. At one level, we are the chooser. And that's part of the experience of being a separate self, is this illusion, you could say, of choice. But even though it's an illusion of choice, you still have to choose. It's a very convincing illusion. And the reason I call it an illusion is that there's also a deeper reality underneath it, which is not so obvious when you're busy making choices, including the soul's choice to come back, including this choice made at maybe a deeper level than your conscious mind. As Cheryl types, her daughter came here with her limitations for her own healing. And when Cheryl realized that, a shift in her mind took place, where she did not see her any other way but perfect. So again, choice. It's like she chose to come here, and come here as someone with cerebral palsy. And so again, where's the guilt? It was a choice she made for her own healing, for her own evolution, for her own growth. And there's so many different possible experiences that our consciousness would ultimately want to choose them all. Even ones that are hard at first to see how that would add depth or richness or understanding to our being, they all do. Our soul, my favorite definition of the soul, which is the aspect of our being that does continue from lifetime to lifetime, my favorite definition of that, of the soul, is that the soul is the sum total of all of our experience. And if you take that in for a moment, it's the sum total of every experience you've had. You may be able to sense how every experience adds to your soul. There's no subtraction. There's no mistakes. There's no everything. It's like, imagine if you were not a collector of postage stamps, or a collector of bottle caps, or a collector of antique bottles, or baseball cards. Imagine if you were a collector of everything. Of course, you probably want to go to one of those support groups for hoarders, but still, if you were a collector of everything, then whatever you discovered, you'd be walking down the street and there'd be a pebble, and you, oh, I love collecting pebbles, and you'd pick it up, and then there'd be a colorful leaf. Oh, I collect leaves. Let me grab that one. And then, somebody would throw a beer can out their window as they drove by, and you, oh, I collect beer cans. Oh, great, another beer can. And that is the nature of our soul. Our soul is a collector of experiences, but the amazing thing is that it's a collector of all experience. It embraces all experience because it deep down, our soul knows that every experience adds to your soul. It does. It can't harm your soul. It can't detract from your soul. Take something away. You don't lose something. I said earlier that we only experience freedom when we give it away, but we don't really lose it, because that experience of choosing that experience of taking on another life or taking on a new career direction or entering into a relationship, even one that turns out to be very difficult and challenging and maybe doesn't last that long. But overall, that experience is, you know, gets added to your infinite collection, to your never-ending collection of experiences called the soul. So this is good news. You can welcome every experience, every choice, every decision. And by the way, I didn't really finish saying, but what happens over time is that if you inquire into the experience of choosing, you discover that there's something else also present, also choosing, which is, you could say, is your soul, and even is the oneness, the source beyond your soul, and that it is also choosing. And in fact, it's the main chooser. even when our ego is running rampant and we're resisting and fighting and choosing and, you know, trying to make things happen and all that kind of stuff, what really determines what, you know, most of what happens is the divine intelligence. And you know, its expression also through your soul, but it's even beyond your soul, your individuality of any sort. And so as we explore this experience of choosing, what we can start to discover is that when we choose in accordance with that divine intelligence, this is again the mechanism of truth opening your heart. When we choose something that's true, truer, there's a softening and opening. It is inherently satisfying. It is inherently fulfilling. And when we choose in opposition, then it's more like the experience of paddling upstream. It's more like everything becomes a struggle, an effort, over effort, overthinking, over trying, and the contraction that comes with that. And that's the right way for those experiences to feel. That's how we learn how to use our free will, our choice, our ability to choose. And paradoxically, the best use of your free will is to choose what life is already choosing. And at that point, that's where it's almost like a foreground background shift. That's where you can start to realize that there is this deeper current of choice, of will, that is actually flowing through your life every day, even as you're making all the day-to-day choices, or apparently making them all, that most of the choices are actually coming from that deeper place. And so as you just through inquiry, just through curiosity, you start to notice your experience when you choose something that is contracting, that is not very true, that is not really in alignment with some deeper calling or drive in your being, something coming from your from deep within. And so I had a little pop-up on my computer. So when you start to recognize this dynamic between your own choices and the deeper choices, then there becomes this paradoxical option, which is to choose what is already happening. And that allows you to experience more fully the divine intelligence as it moves through you. And ultimately, your identity can shift from this separate chooser to the totality. As I said earlier, what you are is that which is dreaming this whole universe into existence. don't be fooled by that character called Cheryl or Sharon or Nirmala or John or Sue. That's the illusion that you are that. What you are is that which is dreaming, that separate self. Oh boy, here's a juicy question that someone typed in. My question really is, why are there so many people really suffering, like starving? And you know, it's really difficult from our human perspective to understand the value of an experience like that. And yet, again, if the soul, in the soul's perspective, every experience adds to your soul. There is a depth, a dimension to every experience that adds to your soul. Even painful ones, even fatal experiences, everything adds and adds and adds. And you know, both things are true. It's not that recognizing that starvation is actually ultimately a rich experience for your soul or for God through us to explore does not in any way deny or counteract the fact that it is also a tragic and painful experience, and does not in any way suggest that there's nothing, you know, nothing you can do about it. Obviously, anytime you can do something to prevent your own starvation or, you know, the starvation of anyone else you share this planet with, then that's entirely, you know, beautiful, wonderful choice. It's also still an experience that adds to your soul. And so it doesn't have to be a way of denying the painfulness of those experiences, or deny the potential to counteract them and to prevent them when possible, and to relieve the suffering, including starvation, including, you know, abuse, including even just, you know, disease and pain and injury, and even the day-to-day experiences. And I guess the last thing I'll say though about that, and this is kind of a middle ground between seeing that it's you know, that it's horrible, it's tragic, it's very difficult, painful, oh God, why do people have to suffer so much, and the recognition that it all adds to the experience of the soul, of the essence. And that is to really explore the nature of suffering itself. Suffering is not actually coming from the sensations or experiences, even the sensation of starving, or even the sensation of being tortured, or the sensation, I mean, these are extreme examples, but even the sensation of, say, stubbing your toe, or you know, missing a meal because you're on a plane and get stuck on the runway, and you know, you're not exactly starving in the truest sense of the word, but it feels that way. And then there's this subtler question, and the question is, are you suffering from those sensations? And the suffering isn't actually in the sensations. The suffering is in the resistance. Again, that exercise of your individual free will to go against what is happening. And it's that contrast between what is and what, in essence, what you're paying attention to. Where your love, your attention, your awareness is flowing. And if it's flowing to the sensations in your stubbed toe, then surprisingly, almost shockingly, there can be little or no suffering. If it's, especially in a case of an intense sensation like a stubbed toe or a, you know, a stomach that's screaming for its next meal, the trick is that you have to give it 100%, 1,000% of your attention in order for there not to be any suffering. Whereas in a more ordinary moment, you actually have to work a little hard to suffer. Though it's possible, people suffer even in extreme abundance and comfort, and you know, they have everything that anyone could ever want in life, and they still suffer horribly because they are giving so much attention to what should be, what isn't, what they want and what they don't have, and how it's not good enough the way it is. So, you know, in these extreme experiences, it's easy to suffer. In more ordinary experiences, it's harder to suffer, but it's still obviously, I'm sure everyone listening has experienced their own ability to suffer, to go against what is, even in a fairly ordinary, not difficult experience. So again, so that's in between. Ultimately, even suffering adds to our soul. Even this strange dynamic between the individual self and the infinite self is all rich food for the soul. It all nourishes the soul. So even that ultimately is not a mistake. And we learn from it all. We learn from the really difficult, even tragic experiences, and from our tendency to suffer, until we discover we can make another choice, at which point we actually are no longer choosing, because life itself is choosing. So that was a wide-ranging discussion today. I really enjoyed it. I really love the questions when they come. So please, you know, feel free to also email me at nirmala@endless-satsang.com. I'll type it in after I sign off here. That way sometimes I can even come up with a juicier, richer kind of explanation or story or discussion about your question. So feel free to email me in between satsangs. And so I will let go of the mic. I know I need to come up with a title. That's going to be a challenge because it was so wide-ranging. So I will give that some thought also and type it in a few minutes. You all be well, and hopefully I'll see you again soon. Bye for now.